You are the best thing that ever happened to me. He's Dr. John Duffy, not you, Bill.
That's
sorry.
Nice of you to say, Wendy, and it had nothing to do with the song that's playing. Dr. John Duffy is here with a strange topic. When you came in, you said to Wendy and me, there's something I want to discuss, and then you told us what it is, and both Wendy and I are a little mystified. Please explain, John.
I think it's reasonable that you're mystified. We can start with that. I wanted to talk about the refrigerator test. A couple of months ago, out of the blue, I just thought, I was with a friend of mine, and he started naming different places that he had either residences or offices, and it crossed my mind, he has a whole bunch of refrigerators. So I asked Chad, how many refrigerators do you have?
Yeah.
And it took a day for him to text me, and he texted me 14.
He didn't know offhand
how
many.
He didn't know offhand. Right. He couldn't really count them up. He knew it was between 10 and 15 or so.
Yeah.
So, and I asked him, well, how many would you like to have? And he said, I'd like to have about 20. I feel happy with 20. And I was kind of curious about that. And I said, why? And he said, I just would feel like, you know, that's the right amount of chaos that matches my lifestyle. I like that kind of like, you know, hubbub around me. And personally, I thought, well, I've got three and I'd like one.
Yeah.
I like things simple and that kind of matches my personality. So it's a rudimentary, I'll admit, personality test. But I've asked a lot of people and the answers are surprising. Do you guys
know
how many
do you have?
Yeah, how many do you guys have?
Two, one in the kitchen and one downstairs for overflow. You know, if we need the space, we use it.
I don't have the overflow one. We just have one and I want another one.
Tell me why you want another one. For the overflow?
I just want to be able to have extra beers in there. I like to be prepared, so it makes me feel safe and ready if it is stocked downstairs. And with the freezer portion, of course, too.
Right. Of course. Right.
Because, you know, you can just be prepared. You can always have backup everythings.
Yes.
That's what I want.
I get that this is the type of thing I'm hearing over and over again. Either people are like, you know, I have way too many refrigerators. I've got to cut back. And with passion, people are saying this stuff.
But is this representative, John, of just life kind of? I mean, you're using this as a metaphor, right? You could say this about cars. You could say this about sport jackets. You could say it about almost anything.
Absolutely. Right. So the idea is, does our lifestyle, the choices we make, does it support kind of the level of stress and or chaos that matches the lifestyle we want, right?
Yeah.
And so when I see the dissonance, when I see people say, you know, yeah, I've only got one or two refrigerators, but man, I need about five. Or you know, the alternative, I recognize, okay, so there is some dissonance in the way you're living and, you know, the way you want to live. And so you want to bridge that gap. Yes, it's an absolute metaphor. This has very little to do with refrigerators.
I thought so.
Precisely.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, did you ever notice that when you go to someone else's house, they have better things in their refrigerator than you have in yours?
Refrigerator envy. That's another.
That's Freud wrote about that forever.
But, you know, don't you typically get the same things? Like we're Coke, Diet Coke, Sprite, always in our fridge. Miller Lite, Modelo, always in our fridge. Lettuce. Lunch meat, cheese, but then you go to somebody else's house and they have better beer or they have more soda choices or their lunch meat is better.
Right.
It's like, because we just get the same thing all the time. It's nice to peek in someone else's refrigerator.
And you're pointing out something else that I see pretty frequently is we have this tendency, and I do the same thing, Wendy, and I will admit I look in people's refrigerators. I do check that out.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to idealize other people's lives, refrigerator being a metaphor once again, right? And one thing I've learned in about 20 years of practice is nobody's life is perfect. Even if they have the perfect mix of stuff in their fridge, something's going on that they're struggling with. And, you know, and we put ourselves in a bad position when we idealize somebody else's life because, you know, then we start to think, you know, well, I'm doing it wrong.
Right.
I'm living wrong. And it stresses us out, right? You know, unnecessarily, I think, because I would guess that your Coke, your Diet Coke, and your cheese and your meats do the trick for you and your family, that you don't need a whole bunch of extra stuff in your refrigerator in order to be okay.
Right.
And how many times do you go through it? And I hoard things, too. That's the problem. Like in cabinets, I love this rice pilaf that's made by a brand called Near East. And every time it's on sale, I buy it. And then when I go to cook it, I have to check the expiration date because sometimes it's 2 years old.
Right, right, right. Well, and that's a little our hoarding instinct is a little bit of anxiety, right? Like, you know, they're going to stop making this stuff.
Right.
Or, you know, right? I've just got to have a whole bunch on hand. So there's a little bit of catastrophizing in there, right? That this could go really bad and I'm never going to be able to make this rice again, man.
That's me.
All right. Because you spent so many years studying people's minds, can you figure out why some people are so organized, like to the smallest detail, and some people
are
thrive
like me.
On chaos? I wasn't going to name names.
Yeah, I know.
I wasn't going to name anybody's names, but you see this every day. I'll give you a quick example. My daughters are a minute apart. Kylie was born a minute before Reese was. But her room always looks like Oscar Madison's side of the world. And then it's, you know, it's Felix Unger for Reese. So
right.
How can that be?
To my thinking, it's all anxiety management. So some of us need to have everything in place in order to feel like, okay, my world makes sense. Everything's in its spot. I'm not anxious. I can breathe. Mm-hmm. I'm calm. Some people have no need for that, and they can have chaos in their room, mm-hmm. and then they manage their anxiety in some other way. They manage their relationships differently. They get their homework done earlier. They get to work on time.
Right.
You know, they're sticklers in other ways. So everybody, even people who are born, I guess, a minute apart,
yeah.
manage anxiety differently. But it's important, I think, to recognize, and I'm realizing this more and more, we're all anxious to some degree. We just manage it in different ways.
Sure.
Yeah.
That
but
makes
when
sense.
Your room is messy, that's what gives me my anxiety because it's like, oh, I want to wire this blouse today. Where is it? It was on this pile. That adds to the anxiety. So why wouldn't I just completely compartmentalize and get everything ready? I guess it's overwhelming and that's why I don't begin to do it.
Right, right, right. And I'm thinking about a couple of kids I've worked with recently and one adult, one grown man who they are so pressed in so many areas of their lives mm-hmm. that part of the anxiety management for them is I'm free and easy at home. I can throw crap on the floor. No big deal. I can right. have a pile of stuff in my room. I love that. You know what I mean? I can
do
breathe.
They really love it? Or is that just where they end up throwing things because they're so busy with all the outside stuff?
Probably a combination of the two. That's fair.
Can I ask a strange question that
yeah.
I will sound like it's not related, but I think it is related.
Sure.
There's a trend right now in adult coloring books where adults will just sit down and color, and it's becoming more and more popular. What's behind that?
You know, you talk about like anxiety management. You know, I think we all need regressive moments, mm-hmm. right? We all need these moments where we take all the stuff that means being an adult, all the responsibility, all the accountability, we put it out of our minds and we just focus on something like playing. Mm-hmm. You know
why
what
do
mean?
You think Candy Crush is so unbelievably popular?
Exactly.
You don't have to
exactly.
think about, oh, I have to pay the bills or I have to get a kid to practice.
Right.
It's shut down.
Absolutely. Right. We
but
need to shut down.
Opposites.
We need that break.
You know how like Candy Crush is fast and furious, but coloring is just so leisurely. I'm surprised that that's become such a big thing.
Right,
kind of.
Right, right. And I think the leisurely part is what draws so many people who live really fast-paced lives. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I've seen people resist that. Like I've suggested that to people like, oh, no, I just don't have time mm-hmm. for the coloring book thing. But when they stop and they do it, they can't get enough of it. You know what I mean?
Something, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's Dr. John Duffy. You can go to his website, drjohnduffy.com, and check out his podcast there, the Dr. John Duffy podcast. Right?
The Dr. John Duffy podcast, yes.
That's also on WGNplus.com. And his book is called The Available Parent. Are you writing another book soon?
I am writing another book. Yes.
Good for you.
Yes.
All right. Well, keep us posted on that. We will continue talking to Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, parenting and relationship expert. It's 312-981-7200. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Dr. John Duffy is here, the author of the number one best-selling book, The Available Parent. John, we wanted to hit on this a little bit today. The way that the relationship between parents and children in terms of communication is changing, what is changing that relationship?
Yeah, it's moving at a different pace. I'm working with a lot of parents who want kind of long, drawn-out discussions with their kids, family meetings, lectures, things like that.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing now is sound bites. You get sound bites, you get texts, you might get one-word answers. And a lot of parents come to me and they say, you know, well, I feel terrible about that. I feel like I'm doing something wrong. I feel like we're abusing the language or we're just not communicating enough. And my press to parents is, you're actually doing it right, and you're probably getting more communication from your kids than we gave our parents a generation ago. So, you know, allow yourself to lean into the technology a little bit. Text, Skype, FaceTime. Use all this stuff. And if you get a moment in the car where you're connecting a little bit longer, take it. But if you don't, it's not the end of the world. Your kids know you pretty well. They know your lecture. You don't have to spend all sorts of time on it.
Something you explained to me a long time ago is lecturing really gets you nowhere.
Lecturing gets you nowhere.
And I, you know, I think back, and Bill, I don't know if your parents ever lectured you, but my mom lectured me a lot. And at some point, it's like, you know, you've screwed up. The lecture, after about 10 seconds, you're thinking, oh, what am I going to do tonight? Why won't she stop talking? It doesn't work.
No, it's like Charlie Brown's teacher.
Yes.
It's just noise. Yeah. Right. So, and oftentimes, I'll just ask kids, like, you know, can you finish the lecture? We'll give your mom a break. Now you finish the lecture. Kids are great. They know. They know where we stand on just about everything, you know, so
right.
We don't have to lecture our kids. More important to me is when you have time with your kid, connect with them. Talk about what they're interested in. Talk maybe about what you're interested in. Talk about politics. Talk about music. Talk about what they're watching on TV. Talk about their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And if you establish a really strong connection there, then when they need you, they'll come to you.
Here's where the problem arises. I've heard doctors who do kind of what you do for a living, John, say, when talking to your kids, don't keep asking them questions. No one wants to get grilled. However, in a conversation, if you came to the house, if Wendy came to the house, our conversation would consist of a lot of questions,
right?
Wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
It's hard to kind of separate it and go, okay, I'm not going to ask questions, but it's going to be a tough conversation without them.
Absolutely. Here's what kids are real hip to, though. They know if your question has an agenda behind
right.
it. So, you know, if they know that you're angling for, if it's part of a lecture,
mm-hmm.
if it's part of like, you know, I've been looking at the grading portal, how are things going?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind
of
a leading question as opposed to like, how are things going with you and your friends? Are you enjoying your sophomore year? Things like that
mm-hmm.
feel a little more benign. But kids can tell if you're closing in on them. They know what an interrogation is versus just like, let's have a conversation that consists of a lot of questions.
Right.
Yeah.
There was a video that has been going around Facebook. I don't know if either of you have seen it. It's a young hip mom who is eating ice cream, and she says, you know what? My kids are mad at me right now, and I don't care because that's my job as a parent for my kids to be mad at me. You can find it. It's all over the place. I agree to some point,
right.
You know, because she said, you know, I hate these parents that say I am best friends with my kid. If you're a 30, 40 or 50 year old mom and your best friend is an 8 year old kid, then you've got problems, as she's eating ice cream. And then towards the end, she pours wine into her ice cream. Now, it says, you know, if you don't, you can't be their friend. You have to be their parent because you don't want to raise entitled jerky people when they grow up.
Yeah.
Now, there is some truth to that. You do have to be their parent. But as most people were commenting on this woman's post, you don't have to be a jerk to your kids.
No. And this is such a good distinction, Wendy. You know, first of all, I get a big kick out of the video. I think it's really
funny. Oh, it's funny.
Really funny. Mm-hmm. Worth watching. But we so have overcorrected this thing that we, especially as our kids become like middle school and high school age kids, we've created something adversarial with them. You know, so not only are we not best friends with them, we think we have to be not friendly with them. And that works against the relationship. That creates this divide. And so when our kids need us as an ally or a guide or a consultant or something, they're not going to turn to us. They're going to go to a friend and they're going to talk about how we've ruined their lives, you know, as opposed to keeping kind of an open line of communication. So I disagree to the point where I think we want to be really very friendly with our kids and connected with our kids and enjoy them, as opposed to kind of like, I'm just going to be your parent and that's it. And I'm going to lay down the law. That does not work.
That's when kids rebel. I mean, my mom was really strict. I went away to Illinois State and thought I could really do a great job while drinking all the time, and I couldn't. And I made it a semester and a half and actually wanted to come back home where my strict mom was. You do need limits, but it's just a different time now. Just because you communicate with your kids does not mean you're their best friend.
No, it doesn't. And the more you communicate and the more you communicate openly, the more they're likely to listen to the limits you want to set. You know, if you're just setting limits, then again, you're Charlie Brown's mom or teacher or whatever, and they're not listening to you. So you, in the end, you want to be a voice in their ear when they're making tough calls, right?
Yeah.
And too often, we're not that voice in their ear because we think we need to be these kind of adversarial judges.
It's tricky because I consider both of my daughters to be my friends, but imagine a friendship where one person gets the last say in almost anything that comes up. Would you be friends with that person?
Right. Right. If it wasn't your mom or dad, right. Probably not. Right? There's definitely a power differential.
Yeah.
Why aren't they teaching parenting classes in school? They do consumer ed and intro to business. I mean, whether or not you're going to have kids someday, you still will have a niece or a nephew maybe or a friend's kid that you're going to babysit. Why don't they teach that? It's so hard to be a parent.
It's so on my wish list. You know, seriously, it's the biggest responsibility we'll ever have, you know.
They give you the stupid sacks of flour to carry around, but what does that do?
If you ever give birth to a sack of flour, you'll know exactly how to handle the situation. John, thanks so much for being here. Always so helpful. It's Dr. John Duffy. His website, of course, drjohnduffy.com. And pick up the book, The Available Parent. It's nothing but helpful. Thanks, John.
Thanks,
appreciate
guys.
It. A quick break, then Kim Gordon with the news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.